In our next case, 2023-0559, in the matter of Jeffrey Harmon and David Beasley versus the City of Cincinnati and the City of Cincinnati Civil Service Commission. Good morning, Mr. Hicks.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court, counsel. My name is William Hicks. I represent the City of Cincinnati and the City of Cincinnati Civil Service Commission in this matter. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. While this case is somewhat complicated procedural and factual history, the issue before this court is relatively simple today. The issue is who has the authority or jurisdiction to interpret an appeal and determine an appeal related to the terms and conditions of employment contained in a collective bargaining agreement between a municipality and a union, and where the union and individual union members have filed essentially identical appeals under both the civil, the collective bargaining agreement, and the with the Civil Service Commission. The answer is very simple. The arbitrator, pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement, is the sole person able to determine the interpretation of the rights contained in the collective bargaining agreement. And that's pursuant to Ohio Revised Code 4117.10a, which provides if you have a collectively bargained agreement that governs terms and conditions of employment, and that provides a mechanism for final and binding arbitration, which there's no dispute is what we have here, the sole avenue for dealing with challenges under that collective bargaining agreement that implicate the terms and conditions of employment is through that grievance and arbitration provision. Civil Service Commissions and the State Employment Relations Board, specifically in the statute, are divested of jurisdiction.
Before we get there, help me understand this order from the judge and then ultimately adopted, or from the magistrate then ultimately adopted by the judge. I'm looking at this language that says, in the alternative, the CSC may hold appellant's appeals in abeyance until the tell question is determined through an alternative process that is already in place. Appellants may elect which route to pursue. What does that mean? Who gets to elect what?
Well, I believe in that. I believe the magistrate's decision, Your Honor.
It's in the magistrate's decision. It's in the court's decision.
Yeah, and in what they're saying there, I believe is, once the issue of whether, because this really comes down to, was the TEL program, the temporary emergency leave, a layoff or was it not? If it's a layoff, then the collective bargaining agreement does say you have the right to appeal the procedural aspects.
I understand that, but what is this saying that the CSC can wait and hold the appeals in abeyance until the TEL question is settled?
I believe that is what it's saying.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then why are you here? Why don't you do that?
Well, there was a grievance filed and attempt to go to arbitration. However, that's not before the court on this record.
But I guess I'm a little concerned about whether there's any jurisdiction here. So if...
Well, the unfortunate case is, as the record... we're sitting with a First District opinion that essentially says you get two bites at the apple.
Okay. So in your reply brief, you say that essentially that the arbitrator could decide whether or not this constitutes a layoff. And
correct.
If it constitutes a layoff, then they would have the right to go to the Civil Service Commission.
That's correct.
Isn't that essentially what this language is saying, if this really gives the CSC the power to hold appellant's appeal in abeyance?
Well, it does more than that, because I think it creates a situation where, using this precedent, other employees who don't like, you know, maybe have are at odds with their union or want to bring in individual claims can try to get two bites of the apple. The First District's decision essentially creates potential for foreign shopping, inconsistent decisions,
well, but
with contradictory results.
But essentially what you've said is that you think that the arbitration should go forward first, and then if the arbitration goes a certain way, then they can go before the CSC. I mean, I'm not sure what this really says, because it seems contradictory. But if it gives the CSC the right to hold the appeals in abeyance, then isn't that exactly what haven't you gotten exactly what you want?
Well, in this case, the arbitration has been concluded. However, it was on technical grounds, and it's not in the record here, but we think this First District opinion, the way it's read, would provide with two bites of the apple. And essentially, we think the First District put the cart before the horse. They essentially said, because this could be a layoff, you could...
If the arbitration is completed, is this moot then? Because part of what you said is the arbitration should go forward first.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe that the precedent set by the First District Court of Appeals would still impact and allow people to take
We don't take cases because... It has to have a live controversy. We don't take cases to settle abstract questions. So,
but in this case,
is there a live controversy in this case if the arbitration has already been concluded?
We believe so, and there's a very strong implication there would be, because the Court of Appeals said you should have a quasi-judicial hearing to determine this matter. Now, we would try to argue that that we still should prevail. However, there's a very real possibility of inconsistent, contradictory results where the Civil Service Commission could take it and say, "Oh, well, we think it's now a layoff."
But wait a second. There's already been, you've now told us, an arbitration in this case. So is there still a possibility of inconsistent results?
Yes, because the arbitration was not on the merits.
Well, but the arbitration's done. Then how could it be inconsistent?
But we don't. We don't have the
results.
Hold on.
Let me finish my question.
We believe there's still a chance of inconsistent results in this matter, and that's why we think the First District should be reversed, because we think their analysis ignored, the contract. They completely ignored the management rights clause in this case and said, essentially, narrowed the opportunities or expanded for individuals like the Appellees here, the ability to bring a second bite at the apple, as it were, to try to form shop and obtain the result that they want, based on our reading of the case. And that's why we brought this case here.
But the arbitration, the conclusion of arbitration, it's not really before us.
That is not before you,
And it wasn't before the First District either, was it?
No, it was still in the process. So, to continue, we believe the First District's opinion, if it's allowed to stand, again, would create possibility of inconsistent results, encourage foreign shopping, increase litigation by allowing people to take things to both arbitration and to civil service, CERB, and appeal it to the court through the court system, which could greatly increase the burden on the courts. And it essentially is inconsistent with the statutory scheme that was devised in the early 80s to try to bring some more sensible and reason and certainty to labor management relations. And essentially, if you have a collective bargaining agreement that in any way touches on the interpretation of a contract, your sole avenue is through the grievance and arbitration proceeding. One of the First District's primary errors was when they stated that the only avenue, the only mention of a layoff or any relief from work was under Article 10. But they completely read out 5.2, which is the management rights provision of the contract, which, having done hundreds of arbitrations, often that is where the primary arguments are in trying to interpret a contract decision and a dispute between the union and management. And in the management rights clause, it says it reserves the rights to the management, including the right to lay off or relieve due to lack of work or funds or for other legitimate reasons, i.e., in this case, we believe other legitimate reasons include COVID and the consequential shutting down of the state through orders and quarantines. And in this case, that is the key. And once you have to interpret part of the collective bargaining agreement.
I guess I need to go back to this because I'm still just kind of flummoxed from what you told me about the arbitration being completed. So if the arbitration didn't settle whether or not these were layoffs, then why shouldn't they have the opportunity to do that?
Well, because 411710 gives the sole avenue through the grievance procedure. The fact that they don't have another opportunity to take it through civil service, that is not a right they have. Part of being a member of the union and being a part of the collective union is you give up some of your individual rights to the collective whole. In this case...
Okay, but you've conceded that these were layoffs.
No, Your Honor. We have
okay,
not...
Well, hold on. I'm just going to say, let me finish, please. You conceded in your brief that if these were found to be layoffs, then they had a right to litigate that through the Civil Service Commission, the procedural aspects of the layoffs. That's what you
that's
said.
That's correct. I'm sorry. I didn't know. If there was a layoff, that's correct.
Right. And so if that wasn't settled in the arbitration procedure, how is that ever going to be settled?
If another incident comes up where we have to create some sort of temporary leave program or something, that can be taken to an arbitrator again. We think that this case, where the concern is with the way the First District opinion was written, and given the fact that counsel for the appellees here is also counsel for the union, essentially brought two bites of the apple simultaneously, it creates a really unmanageable and uncertain procedure.
Well, I want to understand the facts. So, and perhaps I'm wrong, but what I thought I read and what I've written down is the city really gave employees alternatives. You're either on layoff where you can choose to use your personal time off, vacation, sick leave during this time for whatever reason, and then you stay active employee. I would assume that that means their seniority and proceeds to accrue and the like. They don't lose their place. So the city put them in a choose the box.
That's correct, Your Honor. They were either allowed to go on unemployment, where we still continued to provide them health care, but then they would not accrue seniority and other things like that, or they could run their time out, use their leave balances, and it would be as if they're still working, they just aren't coming in, they're using their leave, accrued leave.
Did the city really make a decision in this, or just create this situation of putting employees in this position of you have to choose what you're going to be?
I guess I would like to phrase this. We worked with the union. They were involved, and we talked to them, and we gave them an option rather than just putting people, in departments. We had whole departments that couldn't come in by virtue of state orders. And so we tried to arrive at a decision and a program that would try to have the least pain for the employees.
So were some people laid? So the Chief Justice used the term layoff. Some people would be layoffed. Some people could use their sick leave, et cetera, et cetera. So there's part of the group that was indeed laid off.
I would never use the term layoff in this case, but they were on leave, yes. They were on temporary emergency leave.
You use the word laid off because in your frequently asked questions for the temporary leave, the city advised critical employees could not contact non-critical employees on leave under tell about work-related issues because this, quote, this is standard practice in mass layoffs.
That was in a frequently asked questions with a lot of things. It was hastily put together, and it was in there briefly, but it was just trying to analogize this to what happens in layoff positions. I would also note, as of this morning, if you go on the code website, Their April 3rd memo about the COVID and the TEL program specifically states in there, TEL is not a layoff.
So one more question. Section 5.1 of the collective bargaining agreement from 2019 about employee rights, you're saying their exclusive remedy was arbitration, but the language says that it specifically recognized that individual employee rights remain unaffected by the bargaining agreement, including those that are enforceable through normal civil service, regulatory, and judicial processes. And I know you cited 5.2, the next section on management rights, but how do you want us to look at this language that's in the collective bargaining agreement?
First, I would say that the individual rights that we have acknowledged is that if it turned to be a layoff, then they can appeal the procedural aspects, like how much seniority do you have, who gets bumped. I wouldn't want this court to start looking at 5.2 and 5.1 in detail, because that, pursuant to 411710, is solely the exclusive jurisdiction of the collective bargaining agreements and arbitration provision and an arbitrator. I see my time is expiring, so I will, unless there's any other further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, Mr. Stokar.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Rob Stokar. I represent Mr. Jeffrey Harmon and David Beasley. Overruling the First District and issuing an opinion in favor of the appellants in this matter will permit agencies of political subdivisions, including civil service commissions, the ability to deprive employees of their fundamental rights to challenge government action simply by that municipality renaming or otherwise making up a new name for the action being taken. Allowing such a change in the law will permit rampant due process violations and essentially nullify revised code 2506 by denying employees their statutory rights to quasi-judicial hearings and otherwise leaving the employees without an avenue of redress.
Has this case changed since we accepted it in that the arbitration is now complete?
It has. So the arbitrator ruled that the union had procedurally abandoned the grievance. Not a single decision on the merits was rendered. So to the extent the procedural posture has changed, yes, Your Honor. To the extent what the city claims is a dispositive question of has a layoff occurred, nobody's ruled on that yet. Not an arbitrator, not a civil service commission, not a court. Employers will simply state that the matter of concern is not squarely within an agency's rules, and thus the employee is not entitled to a hearing. Undoubtedly, municipalities will take the opportunity to govern with reckless autonomy, frustrating the will of the voters and General Assembly, by inventing new names for actions that otherwise could be challenged, knowing the employee has no course of redress. Classified employees can be terminated, laid off, reassigned, demoted, or subject to a myriad of other adverse actions and be deprived of the ability to challenge simply by employers renaming the adverse actions.
Is there a final order here? I mean, did the court really decide anything? The court denied the writ of mandamus, and it just said, go hold a hearing. And I assume the Civil Service Commission can just do what it did before and say, we don't think that this isn't arbitrable, right? Or this isn't fall within the civil service. So
sure.
So why are we? So you know, is there a final order?
I think there is a final order, which was what vested the First District with the right to hear the appeal. The Hamilton County Trial Court did instruct the parties to go back to the Civil Service Commission, and if there were no appeal to the First District and we went back to the Civil Service Commission, it is my position the Civil Service Commission should have given a full merits hearing. However, had the Civil Service Commission upon the remand said, well, this is, you know, not something we can hear, then I think there's a 2506 right to appeal that second decision as arbitrary, capricious, and against the manifest weight of the evidence. And in the Hamilton County Trial Court order here, that finding was made that the failure to give Mr. Harmon and Mr. Beasley a hearing was against the manifest weight of the evidence. It was reversible error. And the city has actually never appealed that substantive finding. And so as we view it, when the matter, should we prevail here, go back down to the Civil Service Commission, it has been established there is a layoff, and
the court didn't find that there was a layoff, right? The court just said give them a hearing.
Sure.
And so if the Civil Service Commission doesn't think that there is a layoff, which I don't know why they would change their mind in the intervening time. I mean, what's the point of all this?
Because the Civil Service Commission never had a full merits hearing on either the question of did a layoff occur or were the procedural rights of Mr. Harmon and Mr. Beasley violated. There was no sworn testimony. There were subpoenas that were requested to be issued that the commission refused to issue. So there was a discussion initially before the Civil Service Commission, but it had no indicia of a quasi-judicial hearing, no evidence taken, no exhibits presented, no cross-examination. So if we allow an overrule of the First District, we see consequences for classified employees. And we think that results undermines really the underpinnings of classified public sector employment. If what these municipalities and their agencies want is at-will employment in the public sector, the venue to do that is to either change the particular form of government in that municipality, change with the General Assembly, but not with the courts. And I think really the central issue here that this court was prescient on years ago in municipal construction equipment operators versus the City of Cleveland on the quasi-judicial hearing level is not necessarily what happened, but what the law says should happen. And in this case, Mr. Harmon and Mr. Beasley should have gotten a full merits hearing on the procedural aspects of their layoff, which is what they asked for. And the initial denial.
I think that's the rub though, right? Don't you have to decide whether it's a layoff before you decide whether the procedural aspects were violated?
I think the Civil Service Commission has the ability to make that ruling. When looking at its rules, is an employment action a layoff? I think the Civil Service Commission is empowered to interpret its rules, its terms, its definitions, and make both steps of the decision. Was there a layoff? If yes, were the correct procedures followed? And simply because the commission denied the appeal hearing, I don't think then the denial would be a bar to the Common Pleas Court having jurisdiction. That was part of the argument of appellants in this matter, that, well, because there was no quasi-judicial hearing, then there's no 2506 appeal right. But again, I posit that's wrong. And the reason that's wrong is the standard of whether or not you have the 2506 right is what the agency should have done. And in this case, the agency should have held a quasi-judicial hearing for Mr. Harmon and Beasley and go through that two-step analysis. As was discussed earlier, I believe the magistrate at the Hamilton County Trial Court found the law required the commission to hold a hearing, and it violated the due process rights of Mr. Harmon and Mr. Beasley by not affording them that hearing. Something else that has to be discussed, and it's been a consistent through the entirety of this litigation, including at both courts below, is that the city has erroneously conflated Mr. Harmon and Mr. Beasley with their union. These are three completely separate entities that operate independent of each other. The union makes its own decisions, Mr. Harmon makes his own decisions, Mr. Beasley makes his own decisions. They are bringing different claims, evaluated under different standards, by different triers of fact. And what the union chooses to do or not do, or how the union would conduct the handling of its claims, has absolutely no bearing on Mr. Harmon nor Mr. Beasley. Those two individuals challenged the procedural aspects of their layoff to the Civil Service Commission. They did not invoke any collective bargaining right. They did not say this is dependent on the union or we're going with the union. They did it separate. And they were permitted to do that by express agreement of the city, because in Section 10 of the collective bargaining agreement, there is a sentence that says individual employees have the right to appeal the procedural aspects of their layoff to the Civil Service Commission. If the city wanted to keep everybody inside the four corners of the agreement, they would or should have negotiated that provision out. But as evidenced by the agreement in the CBA, the signatures of the city knew full well and agreed to give employees like Mr. Harmon and Mr. Beasley the exit path outside of the collective bargaining process, outside of CERB jurisdiction, to have these individual causes of action. And that's important because it goes against the arguments the city has.
Do you think that the absolute question of whether the TEL was a layoff is covered by the collective bargaining agreement?
So
if so, what covers it?
Well, I think the question can be answered in both forums, both under the collective bargaining agreement and under civil service rules. And I don't think that's two bites at an apple or an anomaly, because we often see in collective bargaining situations instances where employees will advance a grievance or assert a right under a collective bargaining agreement, and then, as both the CBA and the law allow, advance their statutory claims.
Doesn't the law allow collective bargaining agreements to allow an employee to give up some of those statutory rights?
It absolutely does, Your Honor.
So the question of whether there was a layoff, not whether the procedures were followed correctly, your colleague says that's subject to arbitration determination. What in the collective bargaining agreement allows a court to make that decision on whether or not this constituted a layoff?
Sure. Section 5.1, the employee rights clause, which does not waive any of their statutory rights, as well as 10.2, which is the exit path to the Civil Service Commission, to allow them to make that determination.
So let me go back to the facts.
Yes, ma'am.
So as I read it, the city gives all the employees two options.
Mm-hmm.
One is really a mass layoff. Regardless of what anybody says, this is this temporary leave. Then the second becomes, but if you have personal time, if you have sick leave, if you have vacation leave, you can start using that in order to secure your seniority and any other benefits under your contract. So these two individuals choose that path, hypothetically. If they run out of that time before there's a restoration of services where everybody returns to work,
mm-hmm.
then they go into layoff. Did they choose when they made that decision?
At first, I'm going to disagree with your characterization that it was a layoff. These employees were relieved of duty for non-disciplinary reasons because of a lack of funding of the employer.
So they didn't use their sick time and vacation time to extend their longevity?
Well, I think that's step two to your question, Your Honor.
Okay.
Step one is, yes, it's a layoff. Step two is, when the employees looked, generally speaking, when the employees looked at the options the city gave them for the layoff, for many employees, if their rate of pay exceeded the state unemployment rate, they had the choice to make as whether they burn their vacation banks at a higher rate, which would keep their salary the same, or their rate of pay the same, and that. But I think they're laid off either way. No matter which route they choose to pay the bills, they're still laid off because they're out of work for a lack of funds for a non-disciplinary reason.
But they're not laid off. If you're laid off, you're not using sick time and vacation time that had previously accrued, right? If you're laid off, you go into unemployment and you're paid through that. They made a choice to be paid at a higher rate. So how are you really laid off if you're still exercising your benefits for pay?
Because you are not getting paid. You are...
You're not getting paid, but you're getting paid through vacation and accrued sick time at the same rate.
You are, but those are benefits that you have saved up, and in the event an employee retires, they get those as well. They get their leave bank balances paid out to them. as part of their public employment. But in this case, they're told to go home, they don't know when they're coming back, they are prohibited from contacting their coworkers. There's no disciplinary reason behind this sending them home. It is admittedly from the employer a lack of funding. All of those factors say this is in no uncertain terms a layoff.
And benefits from sick or vacation does not come from that pool, from the from compensation.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Ask the question differently.
So if if some employees decide, one, assuming they have leave and he left, and they decide to take it, that is not from payroll. That is a different. So if the employer doesn't have money, if this is a fiscal situation for the employer, the monies that would be paid for sick time or vacation time would not be from the same funds that would be paid for employment for late for your working, your hourly wage.
Sure. So I think the question is the source of the wages different than the, if a check is written to an employee for wages versus for accrued vacation time, are those different pools? I believe there is, because the city has to account for its liability of the accrued time banks of the employees, because an employee could retire at any time, you know, win the lottery and go away and say, hey, I have, you know, 280 hours of vacation, I'd like my check right now. And the city has to account for that regardless of the payroll status of that employee.
So you just said to me, and I just want to make sure I wrote it down correctly, that if they go into layoff status, they automatically have a payout provision for vacation and sick leave. So the end result would have accrued anyway.
I'm not sure if they go into a layoff status as it is traditionally done. I do know that there are vested rights that upon the separation from city service, the accrued but unused vacation and sick leave banks can be converted to cash.
Thank you.
Sure. I see my time has expired. I ask that this court affirm the ruling of the First District, and if there are no further questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Hicks, you've used your time, but we'll give you a minute. Well, actually, you have 15 seconds, but we'll still give you a minute.
I will be quick. I think plaintiff's arguments before you illustrate why this is a live controversy. The council stated that the Civil Service Commission can decide whether it's a layoff and the procedural aspects of it. This is squarely inconsistent with 4117.10a, which reserves those kind of determinations, whether it's a layoff, squarely for the arbitration and grievance process. And in this case, in the collective bargaining, 5.2 says we have the power and management rights to layoff or relieve due to lack of work or funds, or for other legitimate reasons. That means that there are other avenues other than layoff under the collective bargaining agreement, and you can only determine that through the collective bargaining agreement. We would ask that you reverse the First District Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll receive a decision from the court.